Welcome to the EcoNews Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. And as always, I'm joined by my friends, Larry Glass of the North Coast Environmental Center. Hey, Larry.
Howdy, Tom.
Alicia Heyman of the Friends of the Eel River. Hey, Alicia.
Hi, Tom.
Scott Greason of Friends of the Eel River. Hey, Scott.
Hi, Tom.
And we have a very special guest today, Warner Chabot of the San Francisco Estuaries Institute. So I will turn it over to Scott because I think Scott's going to kind of set the frame for this show, and then we'll get Warner on the line.
Today, Warner's here to talk about a really extraordinary new study that reveals a potentially really important part of the story of coho salmon that we haven't really been able to see before. And it basically has to do with the toxic impacts of an additive to tires and the way that that additive reacts over time and then appears to kill a lot of adult coho salmon right before they're going to spawn. It's a really interesting, compelling story scientifically. It's a really important story in terms of policy. But ultimately, it's going to come down to what do we do about it? And I think that's where Warner's got a really important story to tell us. So I want to start just by introducing our panel a little bit so all of you have some sense of our investment in coho salmon. As Tom said, I'm the conservation director for Friends of the Eel River. I also used to have Tom's job as executive director at EPIC. And in both those jobs, I've spent a lot of time thinking about coho salmon, silver salmon, how we can keep them from going extinct, especially in the Eel River and the Humboldt Bay region, where we really have our best chance of holding on to wild populations of coho. But over the 20 years I've been working here, I've seen coho populations go from really bad to truly terrifyingly low levels. We have few populations remaining of relatively few individuals, and it's often been really puzzling why coho are doing so much worse than their relatives, the Chinook or the steelhead. You know, the study may illuminate a little of that. So, Tom, why don't you go next?
All right. So, Warner, you're here because the San Francisco Estuary Institute is part of or played a role in this study in some degree. And it was published in the magazine Science. So perhaps let's talk about how we got to this study, and then maybe we can touch on next what this study discovered. So what is the role of SFEI, San Francisco Estuary Institute? What is the organization? What do you do there?
Thanks for asking me. Thanks for having me on your show. The San Francisco Estuary Institute is a really unique organization. It is basically a science research institute. It is a non-advocacy organization. It's also a joint powers authority. It was created, it's got 65 scientists and technical experts. It was created 25 years ago in the Bay Area, in essence, to focus on water quality and to try to sort of overcome the combat science between three groups, the environmental community, the industrial and wastewater dischargers into the Bay, and the regulatory community. And a very brilliant person then at the regional board said, wait a minute, we're fighting each other with lawyers and scientists and arguing, let's create a single nonprofit entity. One-third each of the board will be comprised of the water dischargers, the water regulators, and the public interest groups that are involved in environmental quality in the Bay. All the dischargers will pay into a common fund. That fund will hire a team of independent objective scientists who will monitor the Bay, and the board will define what are the management questions for water quality throughout the Bay Area. And this group of scientists will say, here's the work program you need to do to give you the data to answer your questions so that all three of those different perspectives are around the table and can come up with solutions. Well, it has worked extremely well for 25 years. And over that 25 years, the mission has sort of expanded up the watershed and into everything from wetlands restoration to flood control to watershed management to green infrastructure to sea level rise and climate adaptation. But fundamentally, our core mission is water quality, studying water quality in the San Francisco Bay Area and Delta. About 2 years ago, we had $1 million grant to look at microplastics and to understand that if you're going to try to tackle the issue of microplastics, you need some common methodology around the country. And we studied microplastics in San Francisco Bay. And what we learned from that was that about one half of the 7 trillion particles of microplastics that at any given time are either floating, passing through, or sitting on the bay floor are these small rubbery particles that we assume are basically the result of tire wear. More recently, fast forward to the past couple of years, there was a concern up in the state of Washington, especially in Puget Sound, where they were seeing massive die-offs of coho salmon, and they were trying to figure out what the problem was. The scientist at the University of Washington, basically through a long, rigorous process, concluded that it was a particular preservative that goes into tires that when it falls off the tire and mixes with ozone, creates a highly toxic chemical called CPPD quinone, in essence, a very toxic element, 6-PPP quinone. And that washes off, and in labs, at the levels that it was washing off, at least in the laboratories, they were finding it was killing off 50% of the juvenile salmon in the lab test so they could quantify it and determine that that was the problem there in Washington State.
I just want to underscore some of the figures you're giving us here. So half of the plastic particles that we're seeing in San Francisco Bay, based on this research from 2 years ago, are likely from tires. And then you say that this chemical that researchers from Washington State have honed in on is contributing to 50% of coho die-offs?
In a lab test. This is the quantities that we found in 4 streams in the Bay Area were at a level, when you're trying to measure it, it's kind of hard to quantify and measure in a stream. But so the University of Washington conducted detailed tests. So at the levels that we found in streams, those levels were killing off 50% of juvenile salmon in a lab test.
I think we may be running aground a little bit on a piece of common scientific practice, which is this idea of an LD50, which is a lethal dose for 50% of a given population. That's a way of measuring the toxicity of chemicals, of evaluating the lethality of chemicals. So when we say that the LD50 of a given chemical is a certain amount, a level of micrograms of chemical per liter of water, for example, we're saying it's likely to kill half the fish, which is a very, very high level of toxicity. Yeah.
And that's immediate too. That's not over the long haul. That doesn't even take into account what it does in a year. It's just what it does immediately.
Yes.
Correct.
So that's basically, there was a huge severe problem in Puget Sound. We found the same quantities in at least 4 streams that drain into San Francisco Bay. We recognize that there aren't coho that are now no longer in San Francisco Bay, and maybe that's possibly one of the reasons for that. But you do have roadways adjacent to streams in the Smith, the Klamath, the Eel. So there is a concern there and about the need to maybe do similar testing to see whether or not this is, and we recognize those streams also have a variety of other challenges, from heat to low water to sediment and other possible pollutants. But this is something that the state needs to probably look at.
And that brings us to a really important point, Warner. You, as we all know, California has more rigorous standards for a lot of environmental pollution than the rest of the country does. We impose higher mileage standards that apply to cars that everybody buys in the country. What can California do? What are we doing about these fish-killing tires? There's got to be a way to move to a less dangerous formulation, but it seems like something that we really need, you know, the agencies to look at. Who should be looking at this, and what do we do to make them do it?
Well, I'm going to give you a little bit of an alphabet soup here, so bear with me. Okay. The state has a state agency called the Department of Toxic Substance Control, DTSC, Department of Toxic Substance Control. They have a program that was put in place called the Safer Consumer Products Program, Safer Consumer Products Program. And under this program is set up to try to, if they identify a consumer product that has a problem, to try to empower them to conduct public workshops to look at that product to see could the harmful component be reduced or a substitute put in. Now, about 2.5 years ago, in May of 2018, an organization of the State Stormwater Association of California, which filed a petition with the Department of Toxic Substance Control. At that time, they were looking at the product zinc, which is a proven harmful to fish and wildlife. And they petitioned DTSC to say, could you open an investigation and look at a process to look at this component in tires?
So that petition in tires has already been petitioned.
And then there's an enormous amount of scientific literature. And the CASQA, the California Stormwater Quality Association, represents about 2,000 entities, which represent about 20 million Californians, or more than half of Californians. So you have the public agency that represents more than half of, that serves more than half of California around trying to keep water quality clean in stormwater and storm drains, has asked the state to address this issue. Now, the Department of Toxic Substance Control has a great many of requests on it. So they have to be very strategic in the number of requests, far, far exceed what they have the staff capability to take on.
Let's just note that that's a consequence of having a very productive industrial society with tons of chemicals in production and in use that have never really been evaluated for their effects, much less their sort of second order breakdown effects like the chemical in question here.
We produce chemicals at a magnitude far greater than we have a regulatory capacity to fully test and evaluate their safety. So this petition has been basically awaiting action by the Department of Toxic Substance Control for about 2.5 years now. It is possible that this more recent research that has identified yet another additive of tires, another component, a contaminant of tires, that has potentially lethal effects on at least one particular species that's proven. We don't know whether if there are other species that might also be affected. We do know that coho are particularly sensitive creatures, but there may be other species that haven't yet been fully tested. So it means that there is the potential for the department of, this adds in essence another factor for the department to consider to see whether they're going to initiate action. And by initiating action, it means that they would begin to hold public workshops where the U.S. tire industry and the scientific experts and regulators would be brought around the table to look at what's the evidence of the scientific information here, what's the benefit and use of these particular additives to tires. Is there ways of reducing, if there's proven a problem, are there ways of reducing it? Are there substitutes or alternatives?
So, Warner, you say if the Department of Toxic Substance Control decides to act, who can move that lever? Who can tell them to act? Who do we need to get to tell them to get on this?
Well, ultimately, the department is part of the administration. So ultimately, sort of the buck stops with the governor. So it's if the governor directs the department to make this a priority, then it will become a priority.
There we have it. Gavin Newsom.
All right. Well, I expect to see a petition coming from Friends of the Eel River going to Gavin Newsom shortly on
well,
this.
Well, it sounds like the petition we need is already there.
Yeah.
We just need them to start acting on it and looking at tires broadly. But I want to underscore the urgency of this. Sonk coho, which is the shorthand for Southern Oregon, Northern California coho, were rated in the survey that Dr. Peter Moyle and company did in 2017, the State of the Salmonids report, as having a status score of 1.7 out of 5, which is really critically endangered. They say they're critically vulnerable to extinction as wild fish in the next 50 to 100 years, with a 95% decline in numbers since the 60s. And this study really, for me, fills in what's been a very mysterious pattern. In the South Fork Eel, where we still have these extant populations of wild coho, they're not doing very well in a lot of the South Fork. Where they are still doing really well, Hollow Tree Creek, Indian Creek, are places where people can't drive. There are a few roads, they're used for logging, but mostly those areas are closed off. And I'm really wondering if this isn't the missing piece in the story we've been struggling with.
Welcome to the EcoNews Report. And we're talking with Warner Chabot of the San Francisco Estuary Institute about a new study that came out in Science that links coho deaths to a preservative found in car tires.
While these populations are really struggling, I think it's important, too, to recognize the hope that exists in the coho populations in the South Fork Eel. Right. Going back to the federal recovery plan from 2014, those populations were recognized as core to that ESU. What we can do now to recover populations in these areas that aren't exposed to these kinds of toxins is could really offer some great hope for the future.
I want to emphasize the one thing we haven't done yet is doing testing for this particular toxic pollutant in those rivers to see whether that's the case or not. And certainly the fact that we've discovered it in lethal levels in a highly urban area, the San Francisco Bay Area, is essentially a bathtub that has almost 8 million people in it, so that there's a very high concentration of tire wear and rub off into creek and into these small creeks. Whether or not you have a similar situation in the North Coast is yet to be determined, but it's certainly an area of concern and just adds to the potential for the Department of Toxic Substance Control to begin looking at zinc and other issues that are certainly we're seeing more and more research that shows how much tires are a major component, not only of water pollution, but even the tire dust becomes part of an air pollution issue. So this is a significant environmental issue worthy of some further exploration.
Warner, you mentioned before effects on other species. Can you speak a little bit as to why this study focused on coho and if there's ongoing research into effects on other salmonids?
Well, the reason simply was that in the creeks that were around Puget Sound, they were seeing just significant die-offs of coho, and they couldn't figure out what the problem was. And they began a very rigorous exploration, and they concluded early on it wasn't due to water temperature or sediment or low flows, which are all common problems in Northern California. Those were kind of ruled out, I think, early on as indicators. So they felt there must be something that's entering into that stream that is creating these effects. And through a long and rigorous process that the University of Washington and Washington State conducted, they identified this one particular, it's a byproduct of a chemical that goes into the tires when it oxidizes, when it interacts with ozone and oxidizes. And there was concern among some of the scientific community that if this has an effect on coho that are highly sensitive, it may have an impact on other species. But these types of scientific testing are time consuming and expensive and have not yet been done. So the question is unknown as to whether or not it's affecting other species in Washington State and or California.
I would assume that if it's affecting fish, it would also affect people. And in Trinity County, where a good number of the population drinks surface water as its primary source of water, that would be something that humans would be curious about finding out the answer to as well.
Probably.
Well, and the study does point out that there are potential issues with respect to human exposure, including the use of shredded tires in playground areas, which raises issues about similar toxic exposure. I guess one of the points that I'd like to see examined in future work on this is the question of how much exposure given types of vehicles are likely to produce. The study, again, this is a piece in Science magazine, a really significant publication, notes that you're going to have much more tire residue off of big over-the-road trucks. There's an analogy to the kind of impact that big trucks have on the roads themselves. You know, passenger cars have relatively small impacts. But, you know, one of the things we've seen over the last 30 years in this region is a move from people driving small two-wheel drive trucks and passenger cars to driving the largest pickups they possibly can with the biggest tires they possibly can. I gotta wonder, the more tire you're driving, the more tire you're gonna leave behind.
Well, there's also an additional issue, which is that there's a significant effort promoted by both Caltrans and CalRecycle to use ground tires in asphalt, to create roadways with ground tires.
Right.
So there's an unknown factor there. And I think it was, like, I think you, Scott, mentioned that I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of athletic fields in California also use either a rubber byproduct or ground tires as part of a softening agent in artificial turf in athletic fields.
The running track at my kid's elementary school was that. Yeah.
Soft playgrounds, running tracks, soccer and football fields, and whether that creates a particular runoff issue or potential human impact. So I think this is probably an area where I don't want to artificially raise alarms where there aren't scientific studies yet done, but the use and reuse and distribution and disposal of tires is a very complex issue. I mean, obviously, we need tires. We are a mobile civilization. Tires are not going to go away. So there is a need for the regulatory community, the scientific community, and the U.S. tire industry to explore this and see, can we better quantify the problem? And if we quantify it and define it as a problem, can we come up with solutions that are either reduce the quantity of this chemical byproduct and or find substitutes that meet the safety needs of and durability of tires and such?
And that's where I find some real hope in this quite sophisticated study. They were able to sort of, by analogy, take a giant dictionary of potential factors and winnow it down gradually to what part of the book is it got to be in, what page of the book is it got to be on, down to the specific line and the single word, which means the rest of the book is not the problem. So if we can fix that one thing, maybe we can fix this bigger problem. So that's really quite hopeful.
This is an amazing sort of science detective story. And I also want to kind of give credit to the tire industry because they contributed tire products they were helpful in this study in contributing material so that the analysis could be done and have expressed a desire to work with the regulatory agencies to try to identify, to both quantify the problem and to identify solutions if that problem can be further proven.
So in exploring solutions, what kind of safeguards do we have to ensure that the substitute that we find to replace this chemical isn't just as harmful, or we're not in this same position 10 years down the road? We know how to avoid this same problem?
That is a good question. Obviously, the scientist at University of Washington, Washington State, came up with a way of testing this. As Scott said, you know, once they did this sort of amazing detective work that was able to winnow down the literally the thousands of potential chemicals to this particular one that was proven wrong, they were able to test it. A certain number of juvenile salmon gave their lives in the laboratory to prove this. So you do have a ability to conduct laboratory tests with substitute products to see how it affects juvenile coho and possibly steelhead or chinook or other species to try to ensure that the alternative is if the industry is going to substitute something that works quite well for them, I think it's in their interest and desire to make sure that they're not creating another problem.
You know, between zinc and now this chemical and global climate change, I feel like maybe I should just set my car on fire and never use it again. That's kind of the impression that I've got from this whole call. Oh boy.
We're moving away from the internal combustion engine. Like it or not, we've created a society that is very dispersed and is a auto-centric, road-centric society. We're not as concentrated as a great number of communities in Europe, for which mass transit systems are in much higher use by a much higher percentage of the population. We are locked into vehicles for the foreseeable future. So I think it behooves us as we, as science gives us more information, to find out how to make those vehicles less harmful and more sustainable for the fish and wildlife and the other living creatures that we share this planet with.
And zinc, isn't that from the brake linings? Isn't that one of the prime sources of zinc pollution from cars?
Copper was the problem that was identified about 10 years ago in brake pads, and a process went through to where copper in brake pads was reduced dramatically. I think the zinc is part of the vulcanization process for making tires. It's something that helps make them more durable in the production process. So there's a significant economic incentive for using zinc in tires. But CASCO, the California Stormwater Quality Association, has considerable studies that exist, and you can go to the CalSAFER website. I can send you the link, and that has the petition that explains in which the Stormwater Association has identified, here's why we think zinc is a problem and what you should do about it. So that's the action that is on the docket that will trigger a statewide set of workshops that would look at this particular issue.
That would do it if we can get the governor to say yes. But we're going to need to put some pressure on the state to move ahead with this, because there are a lot of demands on state time and money. That's what we got to do, folks. All this talk about metal and tires reminds me that I wanted to remind you guys that I'm the only guy you know who has had two different jobs building wooden wheels and installing steel tires on them. And the point I'm making here is that in the 20th century, I had two different jobs building wooden wheels that are really not that old technologically. We only moved away from wooden wheels at the start of the 20th century. We only started using rubber tires at the start of the 20th century. There are people alive today who precede that. So technology changes really quickly. I think we all suffer from a sort of an assumption that where we came in is where things are going to stay. It's not.
Scott, I didn't know that you worked at Colonial Williamsburg. All right. Warner, any last thoughts, anything you'd like to share with guests?
No, I just think the fact that this scientific study was accepted for publication in the journal Science, which is one of the most prestigious scientific publications in the United States, and is rather important. And the fact that the results of the study have been reported in the New York Times, Associated Press, CNN, Los Angeles Times, San Francisco Chronicle, Mercury News, shows the level of interest that exists as a result of this issue. So it certainly has, I think, captured the public's attention.
All right. We'll post notes to those articles in the show notes on the Lost Coast Outpost.com. And I also want to encourage everybody to check out the San Francisco Estuary Institute's website at sfei.org. Scott and Alicia, last thoughts?
I just want to say thank you, Warner. This is really important work. I really appreciate your time today, and hopefully we'll get the chance to work together on following up on a lot of these issues.
If you just go to sfei.org, punch in Coho and Tires, it'll take you to a link that has about 8 of the publications that exist on this topic.
Sweet. All right. Thanks, everyone. All right. That was another Eco News Report. For show links, go to the LostCoastOutpost.com or look in the podcast feed. Thanks to Warner Chabot from the San Francisco Estuary Institute for joining us on today's show. If you have an issue that you'd like taken up on a future Eco News, let me know at tom@wildcalifornia.org. And join us next week on this time and channel for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.